You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web at WWBC. So for listeners who are tuning in today, my co-host Ellen, O'Neill, and myself, and Allie, we sit here on Mondays from 1 to 2, and we speak with people about what we like to call kitchen table topics, but whether it's something facing us right here in Brevard County, Florida, in our state of Florida, or around the world, we like to talk to people who have something to chat about. A lot of people want to speak about a nonprofit. Some people want to talk about a book that they're writing. Some folks like to talk about credit debt, financial literacy, running for office. We've got people that speak about the environment. People like to come on our show because it's fair and balanced. We've been on air about 14 to 15 years. We just signed a contract with Danny, the studio here, to stay on for another year. And today is no different. And Danny, I notice Ellen is running a little late today. So it's you and I for now. Our guest today is a good friend of mine. Attorney Estella Matta would be calling in the second half of our show. She is an attorney. She was in private practice. She's going to be calling in from New England. And she also was recognized as one of the top 10 family lawyers in Boston. She was in private practice for 20 years. And Estella is going to talk to us a little bit today, a little bit about We actually are going to talk about life after politics, growing older, bolder, wiser, and all the things that comes with retirement, healthcare, and taking care of ourselves. As we all know, growing old is not something for the faint-hearted at all. It's just one of those things, Annie, that, you know, as you get older, things happen, you know, and so you've got to start putting your ducks in a row, your healthcare, your DNR, who's going to take care of you. And while we all get involved in politics and things around the nation, you've got to put yourself first as you get older. So that's our second segment. Our first segment is with a friend of ours who's been on our show before, Mr. Lance Hilsinger. He's going to be talking about his book, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, A Court Investigator Examines the Gospels. And what a good read. I read that book, and I couldn't put it down. Lance is a seasoned child protective services investigator, and he embarks on a profound exploration of faith, morality, and the historical figure of Jesus Christ. And so Lance is on the phone, and I'm going to have him introduce himself to our audience, so a listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and bring us up to speed of what he's doing since the last time he came on our show. So, Mr. Lance, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and talk to us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write this book.
Well, Sita, thank you again for having me. This is the fourth time I've appeared on your show, I believe. And the reason I wrote this most recent book is, as you know, I was a child welfare social worker, particularly in the court unit, for over 30 years. And so few of my clients had any connection to organized faith. Organized faith has kind of taken, organized religion has taken a hit because of all the financial and sexual scandals, and people are kind of jaded about organized religion. But I like to look at, see the positive things religion can do, that faith can do, and because I talk with people who were very troubled in their lives, their children who were entering foster care, I saw a disconnect, and that, gee, if they had found some faith along the way, perhaps their children wouldn't be in foster care today. And some of the people in my caseload had alcohol problems, and one of the tenets of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, is a belief in a higher power. And that belief, that participation helped them rebuild their lives and become their better angels and to get their children back and to be better people. And so I grew up always believing in God. I grew up in the 60s. When the Apollo space program was big, Star Trek was just starting, there was Carl Sagan talking about billions and billions of planets, and people of my generation grew up with the faith that there's got to be intelligent life on other planets. And when I was, early adolescence, I thought, well, gee, God has to accept those people too, even if there isn't a Jesus on another planet. Somewhere in the cosmos, God has to want more. They can't just have salvation and heaven for just the people on Earth who proclaim that they're Christians. And so there must be some greater meaning to the life and teachings of Jesus Christ. I celebrate Christmas. I find it very, very meaningful. I like to think about when I'm in the church service, about all the other churches, people going on, and just good in the world.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you took the time to call in today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, because this is the month of December, and when we're all celebrating Christmas, and I'm Hindu, but I was raised in a country where we celebrated Diwali and Christmas and Eid and all the major holidays, and we partaked in everybody's religion, and we learned, and I have found for myself that faith does sustain and feed me a lot. And as I read your book, it's sort of like a general theme throughout the book that people who have faith, they do tend to live a bit of an upright life, some of them, and a lot of the issues that you talk about with alcohol abuse and drug abuse and broken homes, we're not saying that faith will take away all of that, but it does lessen the burden of living in such situations when you do have a relationship with, whether it's Jesus or God or Krishna or Buddha or someone. Am I correct in assuming that the book's overall theme is like that?
Yes, that's the intent, is to bring people to faith, whatever they find it. Some people are they find faith in a literal interpretation of the Bible. I was on another podcast, and the host was a very literalist, and he found that that's fine. That's fine for him. If that makes him nice to his neighbors and the kind of person that you would want as a coworker. As I mentioned on that other podcast, if you're driving in traffic and somebody cuts you off, it's probably unlikely that they went to church last Sunday. Maybe they did, but, we are better people if we have faith in our lives.
Well, and I also
I think...
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. Ellen wants to jump in.
I was
here.
Just going to jump in and say, and I was raised Catholic, so I always say that I go back to my Catholic roots because of the structure and because of the, the responsibility and the rules. You know, there was like a set of rules, the guidelines that you were supposed to go by, and, Ten Commandments, of course. So I always thought that that was not just the piece about having something to believe in, but also having a structure outside of my home or outside where everybody sort of conformed, if you will, a little bit to those rules and regulations, kind of made us all better people too.
Yeah, a lot of times when people talk about morality, it has a sexual connotation. But really, morality also talks about people who commit fraud or charge too much for medicine. Did they go to Sunday school when they were kids?
Right.
People who rip people off as adults. What teachings did they have as a child?
Right. Because, what you learn as a child, it does, if you carry those teachings with you as an adult, it makes you a more productive citizen, a better citizen. You're good at what you do because you have some kind of a moral compass, right? And a lot of people,
right,
for some reason, in today's world, I noticed you touched a little bit on organized religion and why so many people are rejecting religion. And I think it's the messages that we have. You see mega churches and you see homeless people on a cold night and the churches are closed. And you're like, well, okay, well, that church, they can open the doors and let the people in with a sleeping bag, right? But then people look at all these things and they're like, well, I don't want to be part of the church. But we shouldn't, right? We shouldn't do that. I mean, if you feel like faith is something you want, you should follow it, right? But why do you think that there's so many young people today that says, I don't want to be part of organized religion?
Yeah, there's a part, and that's what Gallup poll reflects, is that less than half of people have today have any connection to any organized religion. And just, you know, we only hear about, the news is usually bad, whether it's police beatings or pastors on the take or whatever. But the positive things, and I like to mention, is that one of the things we had homelessness here in San Luis Obispo, like most communities, and they did open up the churches, the activity room. Usually you have a sanctuary and some sort of activity building in the larger denominations, and like the Catholics would take January, the Episcopalians would take February, Presbyterians like me would take March, and we would have the homeless people sleep in the activity room of our church. And so, but that didn't get a lot of press. You know, and those good things that churches do don't get much press. When I lived in Nashville a while, there was a hospital, and there was a big sign that says Baptist Hospital. If you couldn't drive through the city, you couldn't miss this sign. And what I say to people is, yeah, some people might be turned off by that, but have you ever seen a sign that says Atheist Hospital? No.
Yeah.
No. You know, that these people have... decided to that they're going to help care for the sick. That's great.
That's correct. You know, that's a great observation. Yes, but you know, as I read your book, I recognize that the events of the Bible took place on actually three continents. Most of the Bible took place in the Holy Land, which is now modern day Israel and Palestine, but biblical events also occurred in Europe and Asia and Africa. For example, Abraham lived in the city, modern Iraq. Moses freed the Israelites from the Pharaoh in Egypt. And St. Paul's journey took him to Rome, Greece, and Turkey. And it's amazing because the Bible isn't only a collection of books. It's a collection of different kinds of books, histories, legal codes, poetry, letters. Quite symbolic. So, I mean, how much research did you have to do to write this book?
Well, originally I was going to take on the entire New Testament, and I realized that was just a little too ambitious.
Yeah,
I was going to say, wow.
So I thought I'd just stay with the Gospels, and there's, you know, the internet is great. There's I want to give a little kudos to Bible Getaway. They have a digital Bible with various different translations, so they can very easily pull up a difference between the King James Version and the New International Version, and that was very, very useful. And I just walked through it as I would if as an investigator.
Yeah.
So for instance, when Jesus is clothed with a purple robe, well, I ask, where do the soldiers get the robe? And in the book, I talk a little about why soldiers probably didn't have a robe, and
it makes you think. Yeah. It's like me when I remember as a child, I said to my dad, I said, Pa, how come this demon has 10 heads? And he said, don't question it. I said, but Pa, if it's only one heart, how can that heart beat to 10 brains? And he says, you know, you ask too many questions. Because, I mean, I want to know, you know, but it's like you do question. But, you know, one of the things I read, and I was just telling Danny here in the studio, he runs our board, in the sermon on the Mount, Jesus is also hard on divorce. According to Matthew 5:31 and 32, right? Divorce is only permissible when there has been adultery. And marrying a divorced woman is itself adultery. So there goes Danny and I. We committed sin. Because Danny's married to a divorced woman and my husband is married to me. I'm a divorced woman. So Danny said he's got to look it up. So, I mean, is that real?
Well, you know, I just took it to that was a surprise to me as I was looking through the translations. Maybe somebody mistranslated that, and maybe that was taken out of context. You also have talked about biblical times. I thought that, and I think it's disconnect. You know, I was surprised to read that.
Yeah, but it's sort of the telephone game, though. It's sort of the telephone game, though, too, because I remember growing up as again in the Catholic Church that you did not get divorced. It was a big deal. You got ostracized from our parish if you got divorced. So it was, you know, and it goes back to what you had said before about why people are kind of staying away from the church or not believing or not wanting to get involved in religion because maybe the rules, they don't want the rules to apply to them. You know?
Yeah, maybe that's it too. One of the things I want to point out, though, there's always a chance. There's, of course, there's been mistranslations and errors and human errors and everything. But the one thing I want to point out is that people back then had oral tradition. That was very important. And that Americans, we learned to say the Pledge of Allegiance in elementary school. We can recite it now decades later, even though we likely never wrote it down. But yet we can repeat it accurately because we said it often enough. So there's some, I argue that some of the oral tradition, some of the Gospels could be the literal, very close to the literal truth of what people said. It's hard to say which one isn't, except for the parables, because the parables are a little bit easier to remember and therefore more likely to be passed down accurately. But I think people poo-poo the oral tradition that, yes, there were mistakes, of course, but I think we can say that some of the oral tradition is relatively accurate.
Right, and then you also talk about that certain people back then were educated and some weren't. And so the people who were educated, where they would get together and they would sort of kind of serve as priests or mentors and tell other people what they think the Bible is about or what Jesus has said. So a lot of it could be hearsay as well.
That's true. That's
you know?
True. Yes.
Yeah, I read that. And yeah. So, I mean, you really delved into these books Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And when I got to the studio today, of course, you know, our station is Christian-based, and we're so grateful to have a voice be responsible on air here at WWBC. So Jesus was basically killed because he was the king of the Jews. He said he was, right?
Right.
And it's Christmas time. And, of course, that made Danny very sad when I came in and I said that. But here's the thing. In today's world, I don't think he would have been killed. But I don't understand. Those people were educated people. They saw how he healed the sick. They saw what he was doing for humanity. I just can't understand why they crucified him.
Well, and make no mistake.
And they're
that,
so
you know,
mean and evil.
Crucifixion in that state and what they were doing back then in those times. I mean, we have our own little version of crucifixion now, of how we crucify people when some people that are trying to do good, you know, and we have.
But
like,
we don't nail them like that.
No, we don't nail. That's what I'm saying.
You know,
we have
Lance,
our own version of
but
it.
But Lance,
now.
One of the things you brought up, you said that Jesus didn't really carry his cross. Although when you go to all these Christmas parades and Christmas spectacular and things like that in the churches, they tell you he did not. In your book, you're saying that he was too weak to carry the cross, correct?
That's correct. That one of the soldiers kind of commented, you know, said this guy, okay, you carry the cross for him. And he had no choice in the matter. He wasn't being a good Samaritan. He was just dictated to by the soldiers. We want to remember the crucifixion and the resurrection, that's Easter. And here we are coming into Christmas. And if people go to church, they go on Christmas Eve. And the Christmas story is beautiful of Mary and Joseph and everything. But it's probably not that way because it was roughly 90 miles that they would have had to travel in winter with Mary being very pregnant. But she may have gone to Bethlehem of Galilee, which was not too far away. And for a woman very late in her pregnancy, I mean, I can't say this, I'm not a woman, but I would, you know, that may have seemed like, you know, 90 miles.
That's a
know?
Long walk, Lance. I was pregnant a few times in my life, and I wouldn't walk that far.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah, so they may have gone to a relative, you know, for whatever reasons they needed, but the relative may have said, hey, I want to keep my home kosher. I don't believe your story that about Immaculate Conception. You were visited by the angel Gabriel. I'm not a believer of that. You go sleep in the barn. So there may be some truth to Jesus actually being born outside. Mm-hmm. And we tend to think of manger and cradle as synonymous, but they weren't. A manger was a water trough for animals. So there is, as I argue in the book, there is possibility that Jesus literally was in a manger.
Yes, yes. I mean, you really you took that book and you every sentence you really put your thought into it. Now, I notice now you were a child welfare social worker for over 34 years, and a handful of the families that you dealt with had little or any connection with religion. But I do notice that in your book, you talk a little bit about in one of the cases where the family had a connection to organized religion, you talk about cases that you saw different people think differently about their cases. But there was one in particular when there was a juvenile court proceedings when a father had sexually abused his child. And the mother wanted to forgive him and have him return to the home to be with this child. And part of it was because she believed that her religion, which is Christianity, wanted her to forgive him. So expand a little bit about that, because you probably saw a lot of that.
Yeah, that's one of the mysteries why some women would choose their man in their life who had molested. One of my very first cases was like that, and it just threw me that this woman wanted to keep with this man and didn't believe her daughter when that had nothing to do with religion or anything, and it was just like a real eye-opener. I think in that particular case, not the one in the book, but the one I just talked about, was more economic. Finally, this woman had somebody who would help support her. She was not making a lot of money, and sometimes she was blinded by the economics of having a guy in her life. The case that I talked about there, I think that she did believe in forgiveness, and it was a struggle because the facts in that case were very, very unique, and I don't want to get into them on the radio because of confidentiality even years after the fact. But it was a very difficult case, and you could see that this man was generally remorseful, or at least as remorseful as, you know, at least he seemed to be. And then how do we handle that? Do we give that person a second chance to have some sort of relationship with his child? Most people would say no. But on the other hand, if you believe in the power of God, that there were reformed lives, maybe you should say yes.
Yeah.
Was taken by that this woman thought that fasting would help get to that point. In a break in the proceeding, she tells me she's fasting, and I went, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's going to affect anything here in the outcome, but that's how deep her faith was. And I pointed out in my report that I hope that would blind her desire to want to forgive. And sometimes, we'll keep women in abusive relationships. Well, it's just that one time, or he was just drinking, and we want to be nice people. We want to forgive people, sometimes we should walk away from troubles. And one of the points I make in the book.
Yeah, and another thing too, when continuing his sermon in Matthew 6:24, when Jesus preaches, no one can serve two masters. You expanded a little bit about that, and you said either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. But in Matthew 6:24, Jesus emphasizes the choice between God-centered and life-concerned about earthly things. And of course, in today's world, when we see people in higher power who are quite wealthy and changing the world, how do those two things jive? Because Jesus is clearly saying you cannot serve two masters.
Yeah, and I do think that some people get preoccupied with possessions and with wealth and with power and the yachts and what have you. And do they appreciate that people are struggling and that they're living different lives? And yet on the other hand, I don't want to be one of these people. I could not be one of these people who a monk that could live in poverty. I have to admit, I would be a grumpy person if I lived in poverty. There's a certain, and I think most people want a balance there between material possessions Well, so one person I said material possessions are like oxygen. You need a certain amount, but after amount, you really don't need extra.
Right. You have to say, well, how much do I need? Right. Like, how do you go to bed at night knowing that someone has millions and millions and billions, and people up the road don't even have Medicare, Medicaid insurance. They don't have a warm bed. They don't have food on the table. How can you in good faith say, well, this is great? It's not. I mean, I think you have to be your brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and actions. You really do. If you read the Bible and you interpret it the way Jesus actually wanted us to, then you come back to what the pagan Greek philosophers advise, moderation in all things. Because Eastern religions, such as Buddhism and Hinduism, and we all promote peace and harmony, like a balance in the universe, right? And I think you brought that out in your book, that in 1967, there was an estimated 100,000 Buddhists in America. And that figure now is close to 4 million, because people are seeing that that harmony, that balance is so very important.
Well, and I think the difference between Buddhism and Christianity is that Christianity wants to fill you up. You know, Holy Spirit fills you all up. And Buddhism wants to, like, remove all personal, you know, remove all of it so that you can be one with yourself and be one with the universe and be one with nature. So it's kind of a cool dynamic for me.
Well, yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Lance, you touched a little bit on that. So you felt that need to put that in the book. And can you explain why?
Well, I think it goes back to the premise that we must assume that there is intelligent species on other planets. Will they be discovered in my lifetime? Probably not. Will they be discovered 500 years? Maybe. And that I think a benevolent God would just not write off people and limit salvation in heaven to Christians on earth. If you are acting in a Jesus-like manner, if you're being kind and practicing the golden rule, it doesn't matter really what label you put on that. That's why I wanted the people to know that the goodness is found in many religions. The golden rule is there. And if we find an organized faith, it's like my aunt used to say, it's all ice cream, but different flavors.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's true. So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're speaking with author Lance Hilsinger. He's just written a book about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These are books in the Bible, and it's amazing, and it's a fascinating read. I mean, I read this book in maybe 8 hours. It was so good. And I also like that in today's world, where we need more peace, more harmony, more kindness, more mindful, joyful world, you talked a little bit about the seventh chapter in Matthew that begins with three words: do not judge. And I like that you had to put that in there. So talk to us a little bit, because there's so many parents who are raising young children today, and we're noticing bullying and, you know, all the things that's going on in our world. How do you say to people, go about your life and just don't judge people?
Well, it says do not judge, you know, you're not supposed to judge as you would want yourself to be judged. I think the people leave out the other half of that.
Yes.
You know, We need to instill in our children a sense of morality, a sense of, you know, parents, whatever, even if they don't have any faith, they will tell their young children, share your toys, you know. And those kinds of moral instructions are very important. And again, you know, how often does a parent say, share your toys? And if maybe one parent doesn't say it very much, and that person grows up without much of a moral guidance, that's it. And so, we do have to, and part of my thing is, and as a social worker, I had to judge, is this person far enough in their recovery to have their children back? So it's not saying we don't judge people, we just want them judged as in a fair manner and as we would want to be judged ourselves. Because I think that if we just don't judge people, then you're saying everything's okay, and you know, that's not true, and we would not be a better world. We have to say, yes, this is better behavior than that, better than this.
Right, and I noticed that there's a certain part in the book when you also, and this is very important, about paying taxes. In Mark 12:17 and Luke 20:25 and Matthew 22:21, Jesus is asked if one should pay taxes to the Roman government. After examining two sides of the coin, Jesus replies, give back to Caesar what is Caesar, and to God what is God. Expand a little bit about that, because, you know, nowadays, you know, I say I love the United States. I'm grateful to God that I'm here and I work and I pay my taxes and I see the benefits of the roads and Medicaid expansion and, you know, daycare and public schools and hospitals and all that. But a lot of people would say, well, I don't want to pay taxes. But here Jesus is telling us, you know, that we should.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the things I point out in the book, or maybe Pontius Pilate, if he'd known how supportive Jesus was of paying taxes, maybe he would have had second thoughts about letting Jesus be crucified. He said, hey, maybe I could have this guy do, promote the tax collection for me. And you're right. I think we've lost a lot of that. If we care about our human beings, if religion tells us we want to care about our human beings, our fellow man or fellow woman, then we're more likely to pay taxes because we see, okay, maybe I don't have children, but I want kids to go to school and be well educated and be able to contribute to society. It's in my interest to pay taxes to provide schools so that we have an educated populace.
Right. Yeah. And the most beautiful thing about your book, and I put a little star by it. After being asked about taxes, someone asked Jesus, what is your greatest commandment? And he replied, love the Lord, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second is, love your neighbor as yourself. And Mr. Lance Hilsinger, in today's world, that is so very important. We have forgotten that Jesus actually gave us the blueprint, whether you're Hindu, Christian, Muslim, Judas, whatever you are, he gave it to you right in that verse right there. And what has happened to us human beings on earth that we don't remember that he says, love your neighbor as yourself. And, you know, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord with all your heart and soul. What can we do here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today on Christmas month, right?
Yeah.
To spread this joy. Your book is so uplifting, and I'm so glad you sent me so many copies because I gave one to Danny, one to Ellen.
Thank you so
and
much.
I have mine. And so tell us a little bit before we go off air about that verse.
About what? I'm sorry, about?
That Jesus said to love your neighbor as yourself and love your God.
Well, I think it's uplifting. If you have an attitude of that you see the better in people, that you're less jaded, I think the people who are actively atheist or actively, jaded about the world, they're not happy people. You will be a happier person if you see kindness in you. And you have one of the things to point out is that, if you want to be a good person, you're not only kind, it begets kindness. And that if you smile at the cashier at the supermarket, she's not responsible for the high prices. But you can make her day pleasant by just, that was my mother's thing. She would always smile at people who worked in stores. And I just think that made people, when they go home, aren't they a little bit nicer to their children and their spouses and, spread a little joy. And that's why I think that I've always put out Christmas decorations because I think these people walking by, even if they're not faithful, they say, oh, that's a pretty home. That's a happy home. It makes them just feel a little bit more joyful. And that's what we could, especially this season. But just in general, we need to spread a little joy and goodness. That doesn't mean we're Pollyannish about things. We have lots of challenges in the world. But if you look to the good in people and share joy, it's going to be easier to resolve whatever problems that come your way.
Right, and knowing that you took care of so many children in your care for 34 years as a social worker, the last question for you on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends would be, what advice would you give parents who are raising young children today?
Well, trust your judgment stay sober, because roughly 2/3 of the cases that I dealt with had to do with drug abuse or alcohol abuse. So, that was such a big thing, is that you have to be there present with your child. And that's a time-consuming job. Parenting is a time-consuming job. And you're going to make mistakes. Every parent does. But to know that you're there and be present to your children. One of the things that really frustrated me were these absent fathers who would not take the time to even write their child. Maybe they were broke and they couldn't buy a present at Christmas, but you got enough money for a stamp to go send a card. I'm talking about some of the parent fathers would be like out of the area and wouldn't be able to physically visit, but staying present in your children's life, especially if you're the non-custodial parent.
Well,
you still need to stay involved.
Well, you made me think so much as I read this book, because you also wrote a little piece there about the Last Supper, where Jesus proclaimed that he will be betrayed. And the apostles naturally ask who the traitor is. And in the Gospel of John, Jesus answers, "It is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." I mean, he knew that he was going to be, he knew it. I mean, it's amazing how you've taken the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you've ciphered out a lot of things that made it so much easier for all of us. And I thank you for that.
Well, you're quite welcome.
And by the way,
what's the purpose of the book? It's to draw people into faith and maybe come a little more scientific approach, because we live in a very high-tech scientific world, and those two, religion and science, can meet in places.
That's right. And it's kind of funny, because in Catholic school up until second grade, I think every boy in class was Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. So funny. It's like 12 Johns in one class. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in and joining us today, Mr. Hilsinger, and giving us a copy of your book. It was awesome. We're going to take
a
quick
break.
What a
great segment.
I know. We're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super saving sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. Financial Group is a certified public accountant.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And Ellen, what a great first segment.
Really was. 1510 WWBC, you can hit that listen live button on the website, and you'll get us live on any one of your listening devices. And then, of course, we archive the shows there as well by date. Of course, we're here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the show. And then, of course, we share it on all of our social media channels and our website, which is cedamediainc.com. And, yes, Mr. Lance Hilsinger, this is his, I think, third or fourth time he's been on the show with us, right?
Yep.
And Estelle is no different. She's been on the show with us quite a few.
Yeah.
So happy Thanksgiving and happy December and happy everything.
And Estelle is an attorney. She went to Columbia University, New England Law School in Boston. She was recognized as one of the top 10 family lawyers in Boston and was in private practice for 20 years. And, you know, our guest for today could not come in because she's ill. And my good friend, Estella Matter, who we met on social media and we were supposed to meet in Boston at one point and it never happened, she is calling in to save the day. So thank you for calling in, Estella. And tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing now.
Hi, Theda. Thank you for inviting me. I'm not doing anything too exciting now. I'm trying to close down my practice after 20 years, and I'm just pulling in all the loose ends to try to leave a smooth ending when I'm gone.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I remember a couple Christmases ago when you had that accident in the apartment. And
yeah.
And I think that started, that this started this all this this stuff, I most believe, that happened to you with the illnesses and having to be in the hospital and getting rehab and all that. I followed your journey, and, boy, I prayed right along with you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's when the doctors became aware of the severity of my degenerative disease, because what happened to me was unexplicable based on the facts of the accident, just too detrimental. So then they started looking at my bones and seeing, oh, you have a negative bone density, miss.
Yeah, and sometimes that's what it is. Well, I know all of us follow the elections closely, and I have to say, as I get older, bolder, and wiser, I'm more concerned now about what can I do to preserve myself and my loved ones, because the politicians are not coming to pay my health care bill. They're not coming to teach my kid how to read. They're not coming to paint your house if there's chipped paint. They're not coming to mow your grass. They're not coming to take care of grandma and grandpa who needs Medicaid. I think we fight for those things, but as we get older, we can't lose ourselves and our humanity in politics, right? And otherwise, we'll stress ourselves to death. And I noticed that over the years, you have always been one of the stalwarts for women's rights and for women to grow into, give more to politics, go into political office, run for office. Talk to us a little bit about how you felt after this election.
Well, after this election, I was, on the one hand, very disappointed because, of course, our candidate didn't win.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I saw a lot of progress going on in places I didn't expect to see it, in the Midwest, in the Northwest, in the Northeast, areas where we typically don't see a lot of progressivism or a lot of women's rights being advocated. What was it, Michigan, Wisconsin, even Alaska still holding on to their woman senator. So I'm seeing that women are making a lot more inroads with the public. It's the public that has to be convinced that women are good politicians.
Yes, and women care, and I think, you know, I kind of found myself after the elections cutting out a lot of cable news, because there's too much news on social media, on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and it's almost as though people are spending all this time listening to political pundits who gets paid for a political opinion. And some people actually believe what these people are saying instead of actually being thy brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and action and doing the right things for humanity. So I find myself pulling back a little bit. Did you find yourself pulling back a little bit just for your sense?
I found myself pulling back like 80%, Cedar, let me tell you. I used to watch the news basically 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
Whether it was like active or in the background, I was listening to what's going on, all different stations. I want to hear all different opinions. But after the election, I was just like, I'm so turned off. I don't want to hear another word.
Yeah, and I think the news media, they lie by omission. They can shape a narrative, not just by what they choose to cover, but by what they refuse to cover. Because at the end of the day, the mainstream media on both sides, it's all about the bottom line, which is money.
Right. What is to their interest.
Yes, and so
not the public's interest, but to the particular interest of the corporate sponsors and corporate owners and operators.
Right, and a lot of us fall prey to that because, you know, we become obsessed to a point that we think, oh, the team cares about us. And it's a false sense of hope, because then you talk to real people with real problems, that have children and they can't afford daycare, or their rent went up and they can't pay their rent because it's skyrocketing. Or you speak to people that says, I only have enough gas money to last me for Wednesday. And these are real people with real problems. And you wonder, yes, where are the people who run for office on such great platforms when folks are having such a difficult time? Just, you know, some people don't have dental care. They don't have vision insurance. And then you wonder, well, the political pundit is getting paid so much money to talk about these people, but do they actually go out and talk to the people that need the help?
Not only do they go and talk to the people that need the help, but do they do more than talk about the needs of the people?
Yes.
Do we see them taking action, putting forth bills, ratifying ideas, opposing negative ideas, which is just as important, because nowadays we have a plethora of bad ideas.
Yes.
And if we don't oppose them, right now, what are we dealing with? This entire Trump proposal for what he's going to do during the lame duck session. Good grief! Who wants to be involved with that?
Yeah. Or immigration. Or you have people who are actually fearful that they will be sent back to countries that they know nothing about.
Exactly, especially with the whole reformation of the Senate. We used to know that there was a Senate on one. We used to have a bipartisan system, which meant that we had two layers of government in the Congress, and we had two parties. That's not clear anymore. A lot of the Democrats voted for Trump, except for on the top of the ticket, and then for other candidates in the lower part of the ticket. And that's very confusing in and of itself.
Yeah, people, it looks like we have a very confused electorate. That's what I said. So, you know, one of the things that we're noticing when I do watch cable news is the collapsing of not just economies around the world, but in particular, the Russian economy. And I know that has worldwide ramifications. And here in the United States as well, it's going to affect our economy. Are you noticing anything like that?
Absolutely. I've been following it very closely. The Russian ruble is completely weakened. Inflation is soaring. And they have a shrinking workforce threatening economic stability. This in turn affects their military spending, which affects the war, not to mention private sector things like health care and education, which we would expect our government to provide for us and not just, you know, spend all their money on bombs. We've got all kinds of problems, regional inequalities, deeper social and economic fractures are being visible. It's a mess.
Yeah, and you know, I think the Democrats lost their voices and they lost their messaging. I think they just were focusing so much on culture wars and not the economy. And I think that's something that you also notice, that we should focus more on the economy. And the economy is doing well, but they were not able to message it properly at all.
I agree with you. The economy is doing much better than anybody anticipated. And when you look at the statistics, they're all very positive. And not only that, but look at people's behavior, the spending patterns, the traveling, the vacations, the new home purchases. This is all indicator that the economy is doing well. And if people have this morose idea that, oh, well, I have to pay $6 for a dozen eggs. By the way, you don't anymore have to pay $6 for a dozen eggs. I bought a dozen eggs for $1.28 the other day. So it's just this psychological handicap that consumers are living with about how expensive things were, because they're remembering the old COVID days.
Yes. So, you know, in your profession as an attorney for 20 years in private practice, tell our listeners here, Estella Mata, what inspired you to become an attorney? Because in today's world, we're watching so many programs being cut from colleges and universities, right? But you went to school back in the day and you wanted to be a lawyer. Talk to our listeners a little bit about what inspired you.
Well, ever since I entered high school, I had a very keen mind for facts and history. And I became a history major. And when I went to my undergraduate, I became a history major. And I was fascinated by the interplay between law and history, how the history of law developed along with the history of our civilization. So I, in my pursuit of history, I got more and more involved in law. And then eventually I just went to law school and you know, did the deed.
Yeah.
But it was years in the making because I had to decide what it was I wanted to do before I just went ahead and plunged into it.
Yeah. Did you have any role models or mentors who influenced you along the way? Because not only are you an attorney, but you're a really good civil rights attorney as well. And you've seen a lot and done a lot. And it's got to be like somebody influenced you in your life as well.
Well, I'll tell you, my biggest influences were really some of the Supreme Court. I happen to love Oliver Wendell Holmes. All his writings on the First Amendment, when they were first coming out and being challenged in World War I, and all the communists were here and they were having their organizations. And Oliver Wendell Holmes was the one that said, that kind of speech is permitted. It's when you talk about insurrection and burning down the Capitol that it's not acceptable. And he really helped set the guidelines for what is acceptable speech and what we have to tolerate.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of cases that followed through with that, like the flag burning and all of that stuff. It's all based on Oliver Wendell Holmes' writing and declaration of what free speech is. And at no time did he say that it was bullying or using public media to embarrass or shame others. You know, he made it very clear. When you get out of line, you're out of line. If you threaten someone, if you threaten violence, of course, that's not free speech anymore. That's menacing.
And I think we took Ben Franklin's comment out of text too, which he said, in order for democracy to work, our citizens have to be contentious. So I think the contentious part got a little out of line. Like, we didn't have any boundaries for what contentious meant.
Well, that's how contentious tend to be.
Right?
Yes.
Right? It doesn't have to be bullying. It can be. We really have lost, you know, much like what your studies, I'm sure, have done. We really have lost the really good art of debate, to be able to debate
and to agree to disagree.
Exactly. Agree to disagree without name calling and without bullying and
Correct.
All of those things.
You know, that's what they teach us when we go to Columbia University. You can argue with someone and you can win, but you don't have to beat them up.
Right.
You don't have to be rude. You don't have to use foul language. You can express yourself clearly, lucidly, and to everybody's advantage.
Right. And, you know, like now we're watching where political obsession for those of us, you and I both, who used to watch these cable news shows, 10, 12, 14, 16, doing laundry, the TV's on, cooking, the TV's on, eating, the TV's on. You can't miss Rachel. You can't miss Anderson Cooper. You can't miss. And now I'm find myself like, you know what? The political obsession just sucks so much of my time that I'm like, I feel great that I'm not watching it as much. But what do you do now, like, to de-stress? I mean, now you're closing down your practice, you're winding down, and you've got to have ways to de-stress, right? So what are you doing to handle the pressure and the strategies going forward for you, Estella?
I have a very personal approach. I live in a reservation. So I have about 150 acres of woodlands that surround me. And when I want to de-stress, I go out into the woods and I sit there and I listen to the birds and watch the leaves grow and look at the sky and watch the clouds float by.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to people who are still obsessing over politics? Because like we established, you and I talked this morning on the phone, the politicians ain't coming to help you with your premium for your health care.
No.
They're not coming to pay your drugs if it's a high cost, right? What advice would you give to young people who are still obsessing and causing so much havoc with their friends and their family, not talking to each other, whether you're a D or an R or an I? It doesn't matter at the end of the day. We have to be human beings and be kind, be loving, be compassionate, be empathetic, right?
That's true, but those things don't really cost money. What costs money is trying to provide for your family a home and those other things. And those things, they come more slowly, as we say in Arabic, swaya swaya, little by little. You know, we didn't buy our first house, you know, the first year my parents were married and that kind of stuff. You have to earn what you have, work for it, be reasonable and save, and be smart about how you spend.
Yeah, and what's in the works for you now that you're closing up practice after 20 years of practice in law? What is going to keep you to be pushing forward to do something else? I'm sure you have your mind on something else, because we love talking to you and you bring such a great perspective to just life. And I know I am growing older, bolder, and wiser, and I just want to give my advice to young people. Like, you know what? Relax. Before you know it, you're in your 60s, and it goes by so fast, you know?
It really does. I'm thinking of returning to one of my first loves, which was the study of foreign languages. I have a degree in Romance languages, Italian, French, Spanish, Latin, Portuguese, and Romanian, believe it or not.
Yes.
Romanian is a Romance language. It's a Latin-based language because Romania was settled by Italians. So yeah. They taught them their language.
Can you still travel, though? Because I know you've had the medical conditions. Can you still travel?
Well, it's not as easy, but I have bought equipment that's supposedly designed to help me travel. And I go to California once or twice a year to see my daughters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can. Practically I can. It's not as comfortable, as easy as I would like it to be, but it's doable.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you found your serenity and happiness. And one of the things I try to do, I'm very loyal to my friends, my family, the people that support me. And you have always been one of our best loyal supporters of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Attorney Salamata. And I love you. And I'm so grateful you took the time to call in the month of December, because we have to count our blessings, right? For the people in our lives that motivates us and uplifts us. And pray for us. And like you, when I saw your accident in the apartment, I prayed for you. Even though I don't know you personally, I feel like I do, because that's just a spirit, right?
It's been many years that we've been in touch, Tita. It's more than 8 years now.
Yeah. That's right. Well, you know what? We love you. And no matter where you go, keep sending us your address and stuff so we can keep you updated on what we're doing. And keep enjoying the birds. You've given so much through your law practice to all of us and to humanity. We are grateful.
Very grateful.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to your show. It's always a pleasure.
And we will share all of this great information with contact information for Stella, just in case you have a question or two that you'd like to ask her about her, you know, future plans. She has a great following on social media as well as her website. So thanks again to Lance Hilsinger for calling in and letting us know about your book. And to all of our faithful, loyal listeners out there on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we will be back next week, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC.